It's Thursday, February 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, China puts missiles on a disputed island in the South China Sea.
The standard that should be applied to all countries with respect to the South China Sea is no militarization.
Dozens are killed in a car bombing in Turkey. The FBI asks Apple to crack open its encryption. Pope Francis ends his trip to Mexico, and country music helps fight cancer. That's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has criticized China and said there should be no militarization of the South China Sea. That follows news that Beijing has deployed surface-to-air missiles on a disputed island it controls in the strategic waterway.
President Xi was here in Washington. He stood in the Rose Garden with President Obama and said, China will not militarize in the South China Sea. But there is every evidence, every day, that there has been an increase of militarization of one kind or another.
The Chinese missile's arrival on Woody Island, one of the tiny islands in the area that China has greatly enlarged through dredging and construction work, was first reported by the U.S. broadcaster Fox News based on satellite images provided by a civilian company. What appear to be two batteries of eight surface-to-air missile launchers and a radar system are seen. China's claim to almost all of the South China Sea and massive reclamation of formations further south has been a growing source of concern among its neighbors in the region, even as Beijing works feverishly to expand trade ties. In recent years, China has beefed up efforts to build runways and artificial islands to bolster its territorial claims. Secretary Kerry said he hopes the Chinese will work with other claimants to the islands to resolve the situation.
And my hope is that China will realize that it is important to try to resolve the jurisdictional issues of the South China Sea, not through unilateral action, not through force, not through militarization, but through diplomacy and by working with the other countries and claimants in trying to resolve these differences.
Woody Island, or Yongxing Island as it is known in Chinese, and Phu Lam in Vietnamese, is the largest of the Paracel Islands and is located in the northernmost part of the South China Sea, just east of the central Vietnamese city of Da Nang. Woody Island has been under China's control since 1956 and is a prefecture-level city of the southern Chinese province of Hainan. Brad Glosserman of the Hawaii-based Pacific Forum Asia-Pacific Security Think Tank tells VOA's Victor Beatty, this missile deployment underscores China's belief that these islands are important outposts to project power, and Beijing is prepared to defend them.
We shouldn't be surprised, but by the same token, I don't think we should be overly alarmed at it.
Would that put U.S. aircraft at risk?
In theory, yes, it would, but I cannot believe that the Chinese would be so foolish and so trigger-happy as to actually employ or deploy these systems. The Chinese have insisted that these are their territory and that they therefore will countenance no challenge to their sovereignty claims. The United States, of course, is, without taking a legal position on the sovereignty claims, has nevertheless made it clear that they believe that these are artificial features that do not incur the territorial waters that come with certain types of features, and therefore we've had these with the freedom of navigation ops for the last couple of months, and we've made it clear that we are going to expect to continue and expect that whoever the claimant is, and it's important to recognize that the U.S. ships have not been just sailing through Chinese claim waters, but Philippine and Vietnamese as well, that they will countenance no interruption or marginalization, if you will, of the U.S. ability to have freedom of navigation operations. And so I think what the Chinese are doing is doing what they can to backstop their claim as they see it. There is no basis for this in international law, and to provide meat behind the words that they've used. But I cannot see them using these systems as a demonstration effect. It's just too risky, too dangerous, and too pointless.
Well, then why would they deploy them?
Because I think they're responding to domestic pressure, that they've clearly backed themselves into a corner insofar as they have to continue to demonstrate that they are protecting these islands. And the issue of the United States is not that we want to claim these islands, it's that we want to make sure that no one claims these islands and claims these waters as a means of impeding the navigation of our vessels. And so the Chinese deployments are ways that they can even, I suppose, threaten vessels or planes that might go into their waters, but they certainly would never go so far as to actually use them.
This report surfaces as President Obama held an extraordinary two-day summit with ASEAN leaders in Rancho Mirage, California. They issued a statement about the South China Sea, urging an easing of tensions, but didn't directly mention China.
I think that that's the lowest common denominator approach. And remember that there are six different countries that are claiming various parts, have territorial disputes in the South China Sea. And the fact of the matter is the United States would do well to argue that we are, and to insist, as all claimants, that all disputes must be resolved peacefully. And the freedom of navigation operations that were done did not just enter into Chinese water, but also went into Vietnamese and Philippine waters as well. And I think our point is that none of these claims are valid insofar as they give each government a right to encroach on U.S. FONOPS, as they're called. And so we will continue. And thus, the issue is more generally a way, a principle to resolve disputes rather than it is singling out of one particular country that is acting in ways we don't like.
Brad Glosserman says the United States is committed to legally challenging Beijing's claim to almost all of the South China Sea, as it is to similar claims by other countries. Coming up, Turkey's president vows to avenge a deadly car bombing in Ankara, and Apple says it will not open an encryption on its iPhone. This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Turkish officials say at least 28 people were killed and 61 others wounded in a car bomb explosion in the capital, Ankara. The blast occurred as a convoy of military buses passed by a few hundred meters from military headquarters. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul that no one has claimed responsibility for the explosion.
Emergency services were quickly on the scene. The large blast occurred in the early evening in the middle of the capital, close to the armed forces headquarters and parliament. No one has claimed responsibility, but the Turkish armed forces are carrying out major military operations against the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, across the predominantly Kurdish southeast. Ömer Çelik, the spokesman of the ruling AK party, tweeted, "Terror has attacked treacherously in Ankara. We curse this attack." Last year, Ankara was the target of the country's worst terror attack, in which more than 100 people died, when a pro-Kurdish rally was hit by two suicide bombers. That attack was blamed on the Islamic State militant group. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Meanwhile, Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is vowing to avenge Wednesday's car bomb. He says the bombing exceeds all moral and humane boundaries and says Turkey will retaliate not only against the attackers, but also those he called the forces behind them. Erdogan has put off a planned visit to Azerbaijan, and Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu canceled his trip to Brussels, where he was to have talked about the refugee crisis with other European leaders. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg condemned Wednesday's attack, saying there can be no justification for such horrific acts. The U.S. ambassador to Turkey, John Bass, says he is deeply saddened and shocked and sends his prayers out to the victims. A convoy of trucks carrying humanitarian aid for Syrian civilians has arrived outside a besieged Damascus suburb, the first part of a major UN-backed effort to reach tens of thousands of people trapped by that country's civil war. About 35 vehicles arrived Wednesday at the entrance to Muadamayat El-Sham, a rebel-held town near Damascus, that's encircled by President Bashar al-Assad's forces. Another 18 trucks departed for Fua and Kafraya, two Shiite towns in northwestern Idlib province, besieged by rebels, the Syrian Red Crescent said. About 50 trucks were to travel to Madaya and Zabadani, two other towns near Damascus, under siege by pro-Assad forces. The deliveries are part of an agreement reached last week in Munich that world powers hope will lead to a cessation of hostilities. They come as an offensive by Syrian government forces, backed by Russian airstrikes and Kurdish militia fighters, continues to strike around the northwestern city of Aleppo. Earlier this week, several hospitals and schools were hit by missiles. At least 50 people, including several children, died in the attacks. Russia has rejected accusations that its planes were responsible. The cessation of hostilities is scheduled to go into effect on Friday. Apple is resisting a U.S. government order to unlock its encrypted iPhone software to help FBI agents examine a phone used by the militants who killed 14 people in San Bernardino, California in December. Apple's chief executive officer, Tim Cook, posted an open letter to the company's millions of customers Wednesday, saying the firm would challenge a court's order to devise new software that can defeat Apple's own security measures. The government's move is unprecedented and an overreach, according to Cook, and he said it has a chilling implication for citizens' personal privacy. Here in Washington, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said President Barack Obama views the encryption issue as an important national priority and fully supports the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice in their request to Apple.
Obviously, the Department of Justice and the FBI can count on the full support of the White House as they conduct an investigation to learn as much as they possibly can about this particular incident. The president certainly believes that that is an important national priority, but it's ultimately the responsibility of these independent law enforcement professionals to do that.
VOA's internet correspondent Doug Bernard says that if Apple has to write the code to break the encryption, it could have resounding implications for technology users worldwide.
You know, you can say, well, it's a secure backdoor, we've got lots of locks on it and that kind of thing. But as we know, any time that there is any entry into a system, whether it's your phone, your computer, your iPad, people will find a way into it. If you build it, they will break in. And that could be bad guys, hackers, or it could be bad governments. So I think there's a real pushback on the part of industry and cyber types to say that any talk of any new doors is just going to lead to a compromised system.
Apple strengthened encryption of its phones in 2014 amid increased public concern about digital privacy. The government has complained in the past that the higher security measures make criminal and national security investigations more difficult. So what is the world saying about the Apple FBI showdown? Well, for that, we turn to our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave. The U.S. FBI wants Apple's help breaking into the iPhone owned by one of the San Bernardino shooting suspects. To refresh our listeners' minds, 14 people were killed and 22 were seriously injured in California back in December. But Apple is refusing to cooperate, and I can explain why in a little bit. This clash has been actually going on for about 2 years, but it's now centered on one of America's biggest fears, which is terrorism.
Now, that is definitely a national security concern. So what is Apple refusing to do?
Well, it has to do with something called encryption keys. What it is a security measure that turns data into an unreadable cipher by putting it through complex algorithms. Back in 2014, Apple threw away the encryption keys that had previously allowed it to help law enforcement unlock customers' iPhones. So without the keys, Apple can't help the FBI anymore. Apple CEO Tim Cook wrote in a statement that he fears the FBI's demand would undermine the Americans' freedom and liberty that should be protected by the government. Changing the gear a little bit, leading Republican presidential contender Donald Trump had something to say about this.
Why does that not surprise me? Mr. Trump has something to say about everything. What did he say?
He said that Apple should comply with the judge's order and help the FBI. He appeared on Fox TV and said, "I agree 100% with the courts. We have to open it up. We have to use our heads. We have to use common sense. Under the CNN article that covered his remarks, the most liked comment reads like this. Reason number 2 million why this man should not be a candidate. He doesn't even have a basic understanding of what the Constitution is or why it exists. To a CNN meme that quoted Cook saying, the government is asking Apple to hack our own users, the first comment reads like this. No, they're asking you to hack one user in particular, and for a good reason. And to say you cannot is not right, this is a walk through the park for you. Meaning that's pretty easy. That's all for me today. Dave?
That's G. Abby Lee. Now, you can tweet to her directly. Her handle is at G. Abby Lee. That's J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. Still in the cyber world, President Obama has named former National Security Advisor Tom Donilon and former IBM CEO Sam Salmisano to lead a new federal commission tasked with enhancing the U.S.'s cybersecurity. At the White House, Mr. Obama said the commission will be responsible for establishing a long-term roadmap for making the nation's data and computing system safe.
The Internet has brought incredible opportunity, incredible wealth. It gives us access to data and information that are enhancing our lives in all sorts of ways. It also means that more and more of our lives are being downloaded, being stored, and as a consequence are a lot more vulnerable.
The Commission on Enhancing National Cybersecurity was set up last week following a series of cyber attacks on the U.S. government, including a massive data breach at the Office of Personnel Management. The panel will include top industry representatives and technology experts. It's expected to deliver its recommendations to the president by December 1st. Coming up, Pope Francis wraps up his trip to Mexico, and country music helps fight cancer. This is VOA.
I'm Neil Arcega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on The Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Pope Francis wrapped up his Mexico trip with a special border crossing mass on the U.S.-Mexican border. Francis climbed a special ramp lined with yellow flowers to a specially built platform facing across the fence toward the United States, and he stopped to pray for migrants. Hundreds of thousands of worshipers crammed into the area of the Ciudad Juarez Fairgrounds and into a stadium in neighboring El Paso, Texas, to hear the pontiff. In his sermon, Francis called for open hearts and recognition that the thousands of Central and South Americans who are fleeing gangland executions and extortion in their homelands are victims of the worst forms of exploitation.
No podemos negar la crisis humanitaria.
He said, we cannot deny the humanitarian crisis, which in recent years has meant the migration of thousands of people, whether by train or highway or on foot, crossing hundreds of kilometers through mountains, deserts, and inhospitable zones. The Pope, himself the son of Italian immigrants to Argentina, told the crowd that many of the migrants are fleeing horrible conditions at home and are in need of compassion. He said they are the brothers and sisters of those excluded as a result of poverty and violence, drug trafficking and criminal organizations. Being faced with so many legal vacuums, They get caught up in a web that ensnares and always destroys the poorest. Francis had wanted to cross the border when he visited the United States last year, but logistics made that impossible. So, on his visit to Mexico, he did the next best thing. He held a mass just a stone's throw from the U.S. border. Migrant activists on both sides of the border cheered the pontiff's move, but U.S. Republican presidential candidates Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, both of whom have threatened to crack down on illegal immigration, criticized the gesture as politically motivated. We're just a few days from the annual Grammy Awards celebration, and several of the top artists in country music went home with the coveted trophies. But philanthropy has always been a part of country music. When it comes to cancer awareness, Martina McBride has been front and center. The iconic singer has recently announced a new venture to empower families in their fight against the devastating disease. Nikki Strong of VOA Music joined International Edition's Sarah Williams to discuss the details.
Nikki, tell us about this new initiative called Band Against Cancer.
Okay, so Band Against Cancer is a partnership with some heavy hitters, with Sarah Cannon, the Global Cancer Institute of Hospital Corporation of America, and the record label Big Label Machine Group, which has an incredible roster of artists, including Taylor Swift, Reba McEntire, Florida Georgia Line, Tim McGraw, Martina McBride, to name a few. So Martina McBride, along with several other high-profile country artists, no word yet as to who it will be, they will hit the road for the Sarah Cannon Tour. Details are still forthcoming, but right now we do know the tour will hit several cities across the U.S. and end in October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Now, not only will these concerts help raise money for charitable organizations, cancer support organizations, but each concert is going to have special on-site activities so that attendees can also find ways to be a more active part of the Band Against Cancer movement, aside from just, you know, paying to go see a concert. And the objective, they say, is to bring together survivors and patients and families and friends and artists and music lovers and cancer experts and advocates in communities across the country in this fight against cancer. And through these various collective efforts, patients will ultimately access high quality treatment and research options that are close to home where they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, will this initiative cover all kinds of cancer?
Well, the initiative initially, we'll focus on those who'll be fighting blood cancer, and then eventually we'll highlight other kinds of cancer as well.
Now, Martina had a huge song that was about fighting cancer.
Yes, yes, which is so appropriate why she's headlining this. The song is called I'm Gonna Love You Through It. It came out in 2011 off of her CD 11, and it's about a 38-year-old woman who is supported by her husband while battling breast cancer. It was nominated for a Grammy that year. It peaked at number 4 on the country singles chart, and it has really been a major anthem in the cancer fighting community. And Martina has participated in all kinds of events to raise awareness about this disease. So, and she says helping families who are facing cancer has always been a cause that is near and dear to her heart.
You can get more information about this initiative at bandagainstcancer.org. You can also hear Martina McBride and other great country artists on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. If you're on social media, feel free to connect with Nikki at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA underscore music on Twitter. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
When you're weak, I'll be strong. When you let go, I'll hold on.
Maybe you're one of those people who has thought, what would I do if I hit the lottery? Now, recently, there was a lottery here in the United States that was worth more than $1.5 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars. And a Florida couple has come forward to claim their part of that jackpot from last month's Powerball drawing. David Kahlschmidt and Maureen Smith said that they were in disbelief when they realized that their numbers had won more than $528 million.
And then I ran and I looked online to make sure they were correct and wrote them down, and we didn't believe it. We just kept watching TV and going online and rechecking and rechecking.
And then they announced the Publix, Melbourne Beach. We said, uh-oh, this is the real deal.
The couple said that they didn't know what they would do with their newfound wealth. They did say they dreaded coming forward, and they were worried they would lose some privacy because of their winnings, and they weren't exactly sure what to do with the money. But Kahlschmidt, who worked as an engineer at Northrop Grumman, said that he does plan to retire. Now, there is still one winning ticket out there, and lottery winners have 180 days from the initial drawing to claim it. A Tennessee couple claimed their winnings last month. They went home with approximately $327 million. But the third ticket, sold in California, has not been cashed in. And U.S. officials say that President Barack Obama will visit Cuba next month in what would be a major symbolic step in the warming of ties between the two countries. The White House is expected to formally announce the trip on Thursday, but officials briefed on the matter told several media outlets here in the United States that the visit is planned for March 21st to 22nd before the president flies to Argentina. Late last year, Mr. Obama said he would like to visit Cuba by the end of 2016, but only if the communist-led country makes enough human rights reforms and he can meet with political dissidents. Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro in December of 2014 announced the nations were restoring formal diplomatic relations that were severed in 1959. You've been listening to International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. David Magnus was our engineer. We welcome your questions or comments. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. You can also email us. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States welcomes the agreement by executive and legislative branches in Haiti on a roadmap for governing the country until a new president is democratically elected. The U.S. acknowledges the constructive role played by the special mission of the Organization of American States in fostering a spirit of consensus among Haitian stakeholders as the agreement was negotiated and finalized. The United States also echoes the core group's statement of February 6th, noting our wish that all actors will keep the best interests of Haiti and its people above all other considerations. The immediate job of the interim president will be to quickly hold presidential elections, which under the agreement are scheduled to take place on April 24th. A presidential runoff due to be held last month was canceled after the second-place finisher threatened to boycott the vote over allegations of fraud in the first round. Protesters took to the streets, and the perceived security environment deteriorated. Electoral intimidation, destruction of property, and violence run counter to Haiti's democratic principles and laws. The United States looks forward to continuing to work with Haiti and its international partners to further strengthen democracy in Haiti, reflective of the region's collective commitments under the Inter-American Democratic Charter. The April 24th elections will allow voters to participate in an electoral process that is transparent, credible, free of violence, and representative of the will of the Haitian people. Once the electoral cycle is completed, the United States looks forward to working with Haiti to continue the progress it has made in the past few years, particularly in infrastructure, agriculture, health, economic opportunity, and institution building. Fully functioning democratic institutions will make progress in these areas easier and more long-lasting.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage. at www.voanews.com/editorials.